Hello, this is Kelly Woods, soul doula and founder of My Authentic Life. No matter what wrong turns you believe you've taken, the present moment offers a fresh start. Enjoy getting back on track with Aubrey Johnson and the Road to Rediscovery podcast.
Our lives are laid out on a road of bumps, turns, struggles, and more. How do we respond? How do we endure adversity for learning and growth? I'm Aubrey Johnson, and we'll explore these questions and more on The Road to Rediscovery. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Road to Rediscovery. I'm your host, Aubrey Johnson. The Road to Rediscovery is about reflecting on life lessons to learn and grow from them, and of course, pay it forward and uplift others who are struggling through dark times. Now, as you know, you can hear this show anywhere you get your podcasts, anywhere around the world, globally. We're on platforms that you may not have even heard of. Where you name it, we're there. So I encourage you, if you happen to listen on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please leave us a rate and review. And if you don't listen on those two, still, we want to hear your feedback. You've heard me say many times, feedback is a gift. Just shoot us an email at roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com. That's roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com. Share with us your feedback, and we will give you a shout out in a future episode. And as always, we are truly, truly grateful for your listenership. All right. My special guest is a women's empowerment coach, award-winning writer, and professor. Inspired from her personal journey, she is on a mission to create positive change in the workplace and the world. She's the founder of Empower Her and embodies networking, mentoring, and overcoming struggles. Ladies and gentlemen, let's please welcome Sandra Hunter to the show. Sandra, welcome to the show. It's so great to have you here.
That's so great, Aubrey. I expected to, drums and, trumpets and all kinds of musical stuff. That was such a great intro. Thank you.
Oh, no, you're welcome. Here, we're all about pomp and circumstance. So we are so, so very thrilled to have you here. Now, Sandra, if you can just help us by giving us a little bit of context, a glimpse into your journey early in your career, where, you've met along and different encounters, different struggles that inspired you to just champion this movement for positive change. What inspired you in your journey to do what you're doing today?
Well, like many other people of color, Aubrey, personal experience. I grew up in the 60s and 70s in post-war London, so a lot of racism, a lot of literal stone throwing. I learned to run very quickly, and so I became a short distance runner, which is kind of good for sporting events. But in addition to that, when I started teaching at college, I started seeing how, first of all, my women of color colleagues were treated. And then I started noticing more and more how my students were being treated as they moved out of college, which is kind of a bubble environment.
Yeah, it is.
And moving into the real world. And so I'd see these highly educated, well-qualified, talented, bright young voices, especially the young women. And they could score the interview, get the job, and face the same race and gender bias in the workplace. So to me, there was a massive disconnect between the educational institution and between the beginning of a young person's career. So it felt like we need a safety net for these people. We need something to hold them up, let them know there's always someone there, and to help them navigate those really difficult times of the early career. So it's, how do you get a sponsor? How do you set up professional relationships at work? These are not your buddies. This is a professional environment. You may make friends, but it's couched in professional language and parameters, which you may be completely unfamiliar with. How does that work? What are the boundaries? How do you deal with white people talking over you, white people telling you what to do all the time, having a difficult relationship with a supervisor. You may not have any of that knowledge if you haven't had a job before or you haven't had a career before. So there are all kinds of potholes and, you know, bumps in the road that can really derail you. And I saw over and over again, particularly young women, get so disenchanted and so discouraged and would eventually either vote with their feet and leave or just stay in the same job. So there would be like a plateau and there would never be any upward trajectory. And it felt like, you know something, this can change. We can do something about this. And this is where DEI comes in. And DEI is doing a magnificent job, you know, struggling against the odds here and doing, making wonderful changes and calling people out for, you know, companies out for, you know, let's have equality with vendors. Let's make sure that we're actually practicing DEI in the workplace. But to me, it felt like, you know, we could start at the ground up here. Because there's a lot of corporate that will say, yeah, let's do that because it's popular and fashionable and we can just check the box. But to actually navigate and actually have a course of DEI that is going to be manageable and effective and proactive and involve people requires ERG groups, right? ERGs, you know, employee groups. So, and if you don't have those managed, if you don't have accountability, it's not going to go anywhere. And if you expect middle management to take on extra work and not get paid for it, there's less incentive. In addition to that, if you have employee response groups where there's a number of people who might be, tend to be introverted, tend to be hesitant about speaking, we can talk about all the peripheralized groups here. It's going to be difficult for them to speak up in team meetings. It's going to be difficult for them to speak up in any kind of groups because those are kind of, they're fake in a lot of ways. Let's make you feel safe. We put, you know, your feelings first for the duration of that meeting. And then afterwards, there's no other support. So if you have a person who is, who tends to be hypervigilant because of microaggressions, because of isolation and marginalization, they are, may not be the first person to speak up.
Right.
Let's face it, we tend to lean towards the performative. So if there's somebody who's chatting away and, you know, coming up with great ideas and responses to difficulties or problems or conflicts, we're going to listen to that person. So what happens to the person who is shy and or a peripheralized group, a marginalized group, a woman of color, a transgender woman, you know, all of those people are not going to be seen as performative. And so they feel they're going to be judged. So they're going to be judged on the fact that they're not performing in that group. Additionally to that, they may feel that they ought to speak up. So you've got this person who tends to be shyer and is forced to be extrovert. And the effect on them is compound. And it can really have an effect on identity. So there's all this stuff going on at the DEI level, which is not the DEI team's fault. It's to do with, you know, with corporate deciding, okay, how do we manage this a little better? And so for me, coming in with my my organization is, let's face people one-on-one. Let's talk to the people who really matter, who are the employees. How do we get them to come out of the scarcity mindset, the victim mindset, everything happens to me, and have them take, have agency and change their perspective so that they can do things that will actually, you know, help them with professional development and having access to promotional opportunities?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, as you were saying that, Sandra, there were a couple things that kind of sparked in my head that that you shed some amazing insight on. And first thing was just the simple fact that it's a double whammy, unfortunately, for marginalized people of color when they're in the workplace and they are either too quiet and don't, you know, almost seems passive. And those that are vocal, that feel like, you know, they should raise their voice. They should, they want to be heard. And, yeah. And in either position, either side is looked at in a negative way or has a negative connotation in the eyes of those who may inadvertently be doing the bias or the oppressing, right, and so forth. If you're too quiet, then, you know, you're almost in your place and you're not very significant to be considered in decision making. Mm-hmm. And if you are too vocal, then you are a squeaky wheel. You know,
you're aggressive.
You're aggressive.
We may get targeted as being aggressive, right? And yeah, then you're so right. I want to go back to this point before you carry on, Aubrey. This idea of being seen in this way. So it could either, oh, I was just joking. You're hypersensitive, you know, or the conversely, oh, you speak
right.
Well.
Yes.
You
know,
all of that comes in at you. And then you start to judge yourself.
Yes.
Oh, I am oversensitive. I imagine this. So there's this self-regulation that happens when microaggressions or, you know, marginalization, isolation, all that stuff arrives. It's let me make it through here in one piece. So self-regulation happens, right? Let me not overreact. Let me stay calm so that I don't draw attention to this. So I'm not seen as the hysterical woman of color or the loud woman of color or the oversensitive person.
Right.
And what that does is it compresses feelings inside of you that you ignore, that you say, okay, this doesn't matter.
Completely.
Right?
Yeah, that's so voiceless.
Absolutely. And by saying this doesn't matter, you are ignoring what the body is telling you. And the body doesn't lie, ever.
No.
The body will alert you to everything that's going on. And if you refuse to acknowledge it, that becomes a type of grief.
Yep. It totally does, you know. And my background's talent development, and so, you know, in one of our classes called Crucial Conversations, you know, we say, if you don't say it out, if you don't speak it out, you'll act it out, whether it's voluntarily or involuntarily. That's going to happen. To your point, you know, it your body doesn't lie. And you suppress all of those feelings and all of those comments and things that you do want to say and you do want to be heard. And it's going to reveal itself in one way or another, you know? And
this is so and then in addition to that, Aubrey, when the big grief shows up,
yes,
it will be affected by all of this suppressed grief so that it's amplified and it's overwhelming and there's no way that you can make it through. In addition, of course, as you and I know, we're talking about epigenetic pressures, epigenetic grief that we're holding on to, which we need to be able to let go.
Yeah, we certainly do. And you know, we have to find healthy ways to let go. Not just healthy, but also productive, right? If there's a way to let go that is not only healthy for our own mental state, but is also productive in helping to move the needle towards positive change, you know, then that's a double win. And so I want to talk about the some of the amazing activities and endeavors that Empower Her is going into. But if I can just quickly ask Sandra real quick regarding what you talked about with the workplace and going straight to the employee level, right? I want to know if you can just give us a little more context and clarity on where does the change need to occur, right? In a company environment, we talk about change. Some people say, oh, well, change must happen at the leadership level and push it down, you know? And then other companies who are basically reorganizing, you know, their structure, you know, they're basically flattening it. They're saying, well, no, it must be grassroots. It must be from the employees that champion that so the leaders can hear their cry. I mean, where in what you work in with Empower Her, does that change live? It probably lives in both, but I'd love if you can share with the listeners some insight on that.
Change begins with the individual. Mm-hmm. I work with these amazingly talented, high-powered women who have no sense or very little sense of self-worth. Mm-hmm. And that's where it starts. Mm-hmm. If you don't believe that you are worthwhile, if you don't believe that you're talented and intelligent and educated and you have worthy things to say that will add to the company's value as well as your own self-worth, there is nothing that will happen in the company to change that.
Sure.
And it's a change. I mean, we talked about losing agency and becoming the victim, because it can happen after a while. If event after event happens to you, you can be in this position where it's everything happens to me.
Yeah.
And the danger of that is that you lose agency and it's just, well, I can't do anything. And that's the most dangerous place you can be, because the only person who can change anything is you.
Oh, so 100%.
So once we have to go through the perspective change. And I always liken it to, you know, you're in a little cage and you're looking through the bars and you can see the world out there and it looks so amazing. If only I could get through those bars. Change of perspective says, just turn around. The cage door was always open. You can get out at any time. You can make that difference. And it's small things like taking care of yourself, like learning how to do deep breathing. I mean, we talk about it. You see this online all the time. Does anybody actually stop to do it? No, they don't, because 4x4x4x4 breathing takes a little while to get into. But if we were to do it now together and do 3 rounds of breathe in for 4, hold for 4, exhale for 4, and hold for 4, we would feel completely different. And that's where you want your body to be in rest and digest. You want the parasympathetic nervous system to be taking control. Once you are there, you have perspective.
Yes.
Let's say you've come out of what you think of as a bad job assessment. Let's say you're just working in corporate and you come to me and say, just had this really terrible assessment. You know, I'm doing well on my deliverables. I'm doing well with my colleagues and my client relations are good, et cetera, et cetera. I say, so what's the issue? And you say, well, you know, they said that I'm not making enough contacts outside of my department. We always remember the one negative thing.
Yeah, that's true.
We never remember anything else, right?
Yeah.
So let's say our woman of color is in that position. What she needs is an emotional buffer to separate her from the incident that triggered the emotion. So that's what I do with women. So it's with breathing, it's with learning self-empowerment, it's, you know, all the little things like mantras. It's a weird thing to say a mantra for the first time. I used to think they were just ridiculous.
Yeah.
What we're doing with mantras is training the brain to create positive neural pathways. We default to the negative always. But if you keep telling the brain, I am smart, I am capable, I am highly intelligent, I know more than most people in my department, I can do this, eventually you will train yourself to believe it. You need a mentor. Every woman, everybody needs a team. You need your mentor to give that back to you. This is who you are. This is how I've seen you progress.
Yes.
Then we need sponsors. Sponsors should come from within, mentors outside of the organization. Because having mentors within the organization is an oxymoron. Anybody that the company supplies has one thing in mind, which is their vested interests. They want you to stay in the company. That might not be in your best interest for your career.
Ah, makes sense. Right? Yes.
So the mentor outside of that will see the perspective, and their job is to, okay, not that you can't change what you want to do, but let's see what that trajectory looks like. It should always be steep.
Yes.
So we want the team of mentor, and then we want the team of sponsors. Sponsors are within the company.
Yes.
And we target them. They are policy changes. They are behind in those meetings, those behind closed door meetings.
Right.
You are keynote speakers, right? You have to learn how to target. You don't just go to them. You have to have your spreadsheets, your track record. You know, why should that sponsor invest their name in you?
Yeah.
Because that's what makes the difference in the behind closed door meetings. Because if you and I were to go in on paper to the same closed door meeting, let's say we go in. My name comes up. Sandra's doing well, great client relationships and all the rest of it. And she's adding great value to the company. And I go into bonus bucket number 3, because you know that all bonuses are not created equal.
Right. That's true.
Your name comes up, right? Aubrey's doing really well. And he's got all the same things that I had. But your sponsor speaks up and says, you know something, I've been working Aubrey on X and X projects, and I can see how far he's going in this company. you go into bucket number one, bonus bucket number one, purely because you have someone advocating for you at a high level.
Understood.
Right?
Yes.
So teaching women how to target those people, teaching women how to gain a sponsor, which is often a coach, sometimes me, sometimes someone else.
Right.
Is part of the way that you need a chorus behind you. You've been to those workshops where everybody gets really excited and everyone's, you know, we all want to be the beast. We all want to be, yeah. you know, the person who's on top, and we're yeah. all in it for the time that it's going on. Then the workshop ends and then there's nothing left.
Yep.
Because we had a cheer group saying, yes, you know, when you speak up, yes, you're the man, you're the woman, you're the person who's got the great ideas. That's why you need a team. So when we have that in place and we have actual concrete goals that we are moving towards, yes. this week, I'm going to target who my sponsor might be.
Okay.
In 3 months' time, I'm going to approach my sponsor with these results and with these projects.
Yeah, yeah.
And I will ask them for a sit-down meeting. Because obviously the sponsor is not going to just say, yeah, you know, I'll sponsor you. They want to know why they're putting their name behind you, because their name is their value.
100%. And
once we start doing that, then you see the perspective changing. We talk about actual somatic issues. How do you walk into a meeting? If you slump or if you don't make eye contact, you're perceived as being ineffective.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
As a woman, when you walk in to give a presentation, everybody is looking at what you wear. We don't do that with men, but we do that with women. If you spend too much on an outfit, how much are we paying you? If you don't spend enough on an outfit, you know, you're not taking this seriously.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to be in charge from the moment you walk in. Always wear killer shoes.
Gotcha. Killer shoes.
The brilliant shoes, because... Yeah. Very often, if you're giving a presentation, you're on a dais or you're on a stage. Audience's eye level is at your shoes when you walk in. Mm-hmm. Own it when you walk in. Make eye contact with someone when you walk in.
Yes.
Have your shoulders back when you walk in.
Yes.
If it's a sit-down interview, sit back in the chair. Do not lean forward.
Right.
You are not petitioner. You are equal. They want something that you have. You're the only person that has this. And you can give it to them. Time after time, I've heard from women saying that just the feeling my shoulders back in the chair gave me a sense of power.
Oh, my goodness. And you know, these nonverbals, they speak volumes. They really and truly do. And not only do they speak volumes, but when you execute the nonverbal, you start to feel what that nonverbal portrays.
Right.
You know, and perception's reality. So if you are sitting back instead of appearing to be eager, petitioning by leaning forward, you sit back, you know, you're sitting back. There's an air of confidence. There's an air of security that one can have. And so, going into teaching those nonverbals and how to leverage them, okay, to our advantage in these such opportunities and interactions is tremendously paramount.
Absolutely. You know, there are there's so much else here. We don't have time for it, but there's creating and setting boundaries for yourself, with your colleagues, creating and setting boundaries with your supervisor and speaking to that. I had a client say to me, I've just had this done. I've got to write a paper within a month for presentation, plus all these things. And so what you do is you make a list and you take your spreadsheet in and give it back to your supervisor. Which of these do you want me to prioritize?
Right, right. And when you're doing that, there's a degree of initiative. There's a degree of proactiveness, which all embodies ownership.
Mm-hmm.
That leaders really, really want to see in the people that they work with on their teams, right?
Then there's that perennial of being spoken over in meetings. Women constantly are spoken over, and there are ways in which you can stop it, mm-hmm. and you can insist on your time. We see a lot of women politicians doing this now.
Sure.
It's my time to talk. I will take, and, you know, even hold up the finger as well.
Yes.
So,
yes.
You know, we're using a lot of role models here that we can learn from.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, to me, just speaking over is just very, very, it's disrespectful. And it can be so easily avoided. And to me, it's just, to me, it means the conversation is happening kind of sloppily, whether you agree on whatever the content is or not. Talking over one another, you know, a conversation should be like a dance. You know, you have your time to speak, you speak, and then you stop speaking, let someone else chime in, and, you know, you're listening actively, you know, and if you have something to say to, you know, to counter, then you say it. And if not, then you just simply don't. The conversation doesn't have to keep being counterpoint, 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 you know. And yeah. And so the talking over, to me, regardless of gender or ethnicity, is just, it's sloppy, and it could be done in such a, in such a better way. Now, right. Yeah. So Sandra, in the spirit of community and empowerment for women of color, and all, you know, the great things that empower her, and endeavors that empower her explores, I'd love for you to share with us just in these current days and times, what are some of the activities and what are some of the causes that empower her is being an advocate for in this world?
I'm glad you asked me that, Aubrey, because we are just about to launch Feathers, which is a community in grief program. Mm. And it is actually aimed at everyone. Obviously, my heart is with peripheralized groups, and I'm hoping they show up as well. As I've been talking to, not just to clients and workshop participants, but to friends, it feels like grief and loss have become two of the most compelling and overwhelming issues that people do not know how to deal with. America and a lot of Western countries are completely grief blind. We don't know how to talk about it. We don't know how to manage somebody or speak with, not manage somebody, but speak with somebody who's going through grief. We can't manage our own grief.
Right, right.
So, you know, we get this in, this sense of get over it, pull yourself together, let's get on, you know, be productive, in other words, which is number one in a capitalist society.
Yeah.
And therefore, there is a double whammy, and I'm going to use your word here because you used it at the beginning, of having grief and then feeling bad because you're making someone else feel bad because they're observing your grief. So you have to suppress it in some way. And for people who are peripheralized, there's even more of a pressure because, oh, you're so strong, you know, you can deal with anything. And, you know, so we get that applied to us as well.
Right.
So we can't even sit in grief because of all this anxiety around grief. And for those of us who tend to be hypervigilant anyway, mm-hmm. that's going to fire all our fight or flight or, you know, fawn or freeze responses as well. It's just that, well, you know, this is, we shouldn't be talking about that. And then that gets tamped down. And this is not just the larger griefs that we want to welcome at Feathers. Yes, of course, you know, if you've lost someone, if you are going through a painful separation, if you are just been diagnosed with a chronic disease, obviously, yes, those are the big ones that we always think of.
But sure.
I also like to make sure that people know that disenfranchised griefs are also welcome. So yes. There are so many people who have applied and applied and applied for jobs. Mm-hmm. And don't get the interview, or they get the interview and they don't get the job over and over and over again. And that sense of self-loss is also a grief. And I call these back pocket griefs because mm-hmm. we tend to stick it in the back pocket and we just, oh, you know, just get over it, get
yeah. by it, you know, and go about life. Yeah.
And go about yeah. life, right? But it could yeah. be something as small as being excluded from an office brunch. It could
oh, sure.
be, you know, there's a lot of pain associated with that. But again, you know, stick it in the back pocket. I shouldn't. There's a moral judgment that comes associated with that. Yeah. Feathers is just a beautiful, big, comfortable room with sofas, armchairs. There is a screen on which we're going to play a nature video, no sound. Okay.
Right.
No therapy, no counseling, no group confessions, no bell ringing, no sage burning. Just come and sit with others. You get a wristband when you come in. One color will be for if you're open to talking. Another color is I want to be silent. And those are honored. And so you come, it's totally unplugged. So you can bring an actual book, or you can bring knitting or crocheting, or if you have a project you're working on, you can do that. Wow. If you want to write, if you want to make poetry, bring all that stuff and we will sit with you. There are co-facilitators. So if you do want to speak, we know someone will come over to you. We don't want the history of your trauma. It's just, how are you feeling? What's it like to be you right now?
Right, right.
And then we listen. That's our job. That's all we do.
You know, that's so beautiful, Sandra, and you raise a very good point. I mean, we do have these back pocket types of events and traumas and grief. And so, you know, who's to say that one's grief or grieving is larger or smaller or bigger than the other? You know, it is truly, truly relative because of just the downstream impact that it can have on someone's self-esteem, to your point, when they are repeatedly applying for jobs, they get interviews, and then that email or that letter comes, you know, thanks for applying, but we decide to go a different direction. I mean, it can really, really do a number on your self-esteem. And so, you know, I think there has to be some space for these people, you know, in addition to those who have lost a loved one or those who have a loved one going through an addiction and those sorts of things, or one who have, let's say, have seen, you know, active shooter events, you know. Right. You know, so yeah, those are tragic. Those are tremendous, you know, but so is someone who applied for 12 different jobs and got turned down every time, you know, same space needs to be offered for them as well. And some people, and I was thinking about this when you said this, some people think that it's a compliment that they are giving when they say to you, oh, well, you're this type of person. You're strong. You can take that. You know, you can take this. Where the truth behind all of this is two things. Number one, we are imperfect human beings, right? And number two, grieving is a process. To your point, we're not given the chance and the opportunity to sit in it and let the process unfold, so that we can come out on the other side, you know, with wiser. It's part of our healing, right? And you know, with a much more fresher outlook, so that we can continue with our lives.
Right, it's such a good point, Aubrey. Just want to go back to the point you made about somebody who says to you, "Oh, but you're so strong." That's not about you. That's about them.
Yes,
they don't want to deal with your grief. They don't want to deal with the discomfort. So they're separating it. I say, well, you're strong. So, you know, you're not going to go through all that stuff, right? You're going to be okay because we need you to be okay.
Yeah.
And then the other point about, you know, you're talking about sitting in grief, and I really like that, sitting in grief. We don't like grief. You know, it's uncomfortable. You know, we want to avoid it, right? But it's like any other emotion. You can't manage your way out of grief. If you're at a concert, for example, you don't try to manage your way through the effect the music is having on you. If you fall in love, you're not managing your way through those incredible endorphin rushes you get when you see the person you're with, you love.
Right.
It's the same way. You know, you can't manage your way through grief. It has to come through you. It's a wave of emotion that comes, and it's like literally like a wave. It'll come back. It goes and it comes. You know, sometimes you'll get the bad news and you don't react to it, but that will happen a little bit later. It'll come up with the most, you know, ridiculous time where you're just not expecting something to happen, incongruous. Right. That was the word I was trying to look for.
Yes. And
it also, you know, talking about, I just want to go back to this because it's teaching me so much about the grief that I've suppressed over the years.
Oh, okay.
I've been listening to other people saying, oh yes, you know, we must do this. This is great.
Yeah.
Not realizing, oh my goodness, I should have started with myself. I was in Iceland 2 weeks ago, and my cousin and I went to a hot spring. There, you know, obviously these are all over Iceland. It was beautiful. You know, we showered, did all the stuff, and we went in. Sure. There was this momentary flicker as I got down the steps. Was, I hope these people don't think that my brown skin will make the water dirty. Oh. Where did that come from?
Where did it come from?
And then I had to think about it. It was just what, you know, and obviously nobody was looking at me. Nobody made any comments. It was perfectly okay. Mm-hmm. But most of those people were white.
I see.
Now, I work with a lot of white people anyway, but I don't have that reaction. I've worked with a lot of white people over the career of my professorship or working in law offices. Mm-hmm. But this was something else. And I thought about it and it went back to when I was a child. And when I got into a swimming pool, there were lots of comments that, oh, you know, get out because the water's dirty now. And that just came back. And I thought, I never went through that.
Yeah.
I never sat through that.
No, never processed it.
I never processed it. And the thing is, I'd like us to stop thinking of, because I talk about this processing, I'd like us to stop of processing it or managing it. Allow it to manage you. Allow it to process you.
Interesting. Okay.
So that it will be painful, but there will be waves and there will be insights and there will be moments of humor and there will be moments of deep beauty as well.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm hoping Feathers will do, will allow that space. We have amazing experts working with us in DEI and intersectionality, in hospice work. I'm a story healer. We have somebody else who's doing Reiki, you know, all of those people are there as experts. They're not there to sell themselves to you.
Right, right.
If you feel you're ready, you have a whole stable of experts to draw on. But the idea is to give you the space, all the space you need, and from there to build community that's been so fractured.
Feathers, absolutely wonderful, amazing space that you're putting together, you know, as Empower Her, for creating that space, safe space for people, unplugged, able to do whatever they feel like doing, read, knit, talk or not talk.
And cry.
And cry.
You're welcome. Yeah.
Now, let me ask you this, Sandra, to have that space and create that space, Feathers, and people come to do if they wish to talk, and I love the Kanban, the signage method that you have, you know, for those who wish to speak, have a certain bracelet, for those who don't, have a certain bracelet, and that sort of thing, and in that way it's known right within the group, who wishes to speak, who doesn't, who you can approach, who you can't, and those sorts of things. So is the purpose of Feathers to give everyone a chance to sit in that grief however they prefer to sit? Some may want to sit in it and talk. Some may want to sit in it and knit. Some may want to sit in it and read a book. Is that generally speaking the purpose of Feathers?
You've got it. And it's not about, I mean, we very often, a lot of the workshops we see are driven by a leader or leaders, right?
Right.
This is not. This is community driven.
Gotcha.
So the answers will come, or the environment will come from these people who join us and sit and be patient with themselves. And we are there to hold the space and say, you're welcome. Mm-hmm. Whatever, however you want to show up, you show up. If you want to go stretch in a corner, go stretch. If you want to walk around a little bit, as long as you're not disturbing anyone else, go do that. The only thing we won't ask you not to do is please don't come with your phone.
Right, right.
Or your tablet. Yeah. You know, that can be left in your pocket on airplane mode or outside of the room.
100%. Absolutely. Absolutely. And
the idea of that is allowing an organic growth of community between these people instead of this is what we're going to do. It's just what's going to happen here is up to you.
Yes. Yes. And you know, with gadgets and electronics and everything, they don't provide the answers for what these people are going through. They don't at all. And so, you know, to create a space where, you know, that's not needed. It's discouraged to bring so that you can process or have the process work on you, as you mentioned earlier, and do as you wish with what the space provides and allows.
Is
hugely, hugely important. And I tell you, Sandra, I would love to hear, and I know, you know, depending on the grief, there's a lot of people that prefer not to share based on, you know, privacy. And it may be a little close to them, a little too intimate. But, you know, I'd love to know if a high level general impact on, you know, on how Feathers has on them down the line after, you know, being a part of that group.
Right.
And I know it takes time, you know.
It does. We're very slow and organic here. This is a slow growth group.
Yes.
But the magic is in how people respond to each other.
Absolutely.
Just like being in the same space with someone else who is writing or knitting or even weeping or, you know, clutching a tissue. You know you're not alone.
Oh, and that's community.
Massive difference. That's community. Yeah. So that, and here's the wider view, if you like. And as the group grows, and maybe there'll be splinter groups, perhaps there'll be a transgender group, perhaps there'll be an all Asian men's group, or you know, however the community decides to do this.
Yeah.
And if they do sign up for segregated groups, it's on the understanding they will always join the main group.
I see. Okay.
It's an actual mycelial growth of community so that we can get back to a place where we can talk about the difficult things without everybody retreating to polarized corners. We can't speak about these things right now. But through the organic growth of community, the trusting growth of community, where we know the other person is listening to us, actively listening to us, that we're not going to ignite a bonfire by saying something, that we can start to talk more connectedly, more maturely, and with deep compassion. We underestimate the wisdom and compassion that we have. Nothing else like us. Listening, and this comes from just teaching over the years and also in the work that I do, I'm always blown away with the wisdom and compassion that comes from the women I work with.
That's amazing. And that wisdom, that compassion can have such an exponential impact when working with people who are troubled, with working with people who are going through deep, dark days of despair, you know, and having that space for these women with wisdom, with compassion, to share, not only share, but demonstrate it, right? So that those that are receiving that love, receiving that compassion, can demonstrate it to someone who's going through troubles themselves. Of course, it takes time and it has to happen organically, but exponentially, the impact can be really, really huge. And this is an absolutely tremendous space for people of all levels of grief. And I must commend you and empower her for the work that you are doing for positive change, for learning how to sit in grief and let grief process. I mean, this is absolutely extraordinary, Sandra. Is there, how can the listeners learn more about Empower Her and learn more about Feathers and connect with you and learn more about the great work you're doing?
You can connect with me through LinkedIn, and I'll give you some links, Aubrey, that you can share with your readers.
Okay, great.
The on-ground Feathers will launch next Wednesday for anyone in the Portland area. And it is at 770 Washington Street downtown on the 11th floor. It starts at 5, runs till 6:30. And that will happen every 3 weeks. One thing I did want to go back to, I know this is slightly out of sequence.
That's okay.
I did want to address the issue, the dreadful issue that people carry of shame.
Mm. Yes.
And so to know that there is a space available that is not just supportive, but has no judgment about anything. Yes. If you have somebody in your family who's incarcerated, committed suicide, did something dreadful that you know is so awful, or that you feel that you've done something so awful, know that there is no judgment. And that if you can learn to release shame, you will understand your life's secrets. And that's a Rumi quote. That's not me.
Wonderful. I love that quote. And that quote speaks volumes. Shame is like a tight grip, right? And it can have a tight grip on you. And we as individuals can have a tight grip on shame, not willing to release it. And there's just a boundless, endless opportunities of healing if we're only able to surrender and release our grip on shame.
So true. Thank you for that, Aubrey. That's a great ending there, right there. Let's just have that as a mantra.
Well, no, I'm so excited and happy that you did come back to address shame, and also make it very known for the listeners that, you know, this is a safe space. Mm-hmm. Non-judgmental. Okay. Put your shame aside, put guilt aside. We can't heal with our grasp on those two things, right? Mm-hmm. And no one is going to make you feel shame in this space. No one's going to make you feel guilt in this space. So if you're on a path to healing, it's best to release that grip.
Absolutely. And I think you've summed it up here. If you are gripped with shame, and I was gripped with shame when I stepped into the hot springs before I realized where it came from.
Yes.
I understood where that block had come from. Mm. So you can't understand your life if you are just, all you are doing is feeling shamed. And the shame will come externally. It's not necessarily self-generated.
Well, yeah, and that's so true. It can come externally as well. I mean, there could be an outside element that triggers. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
absolutely. And by the way, Feathers is starting on ground, but we will be online as well.
You will be online too. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'll make sure and include that along with your links in the episode show notes. We'll have your LinkedIn link so people can connect and follow you as well. And we can also mention the details for those listeners in the Portland area, which I have many listeners in the Portland area, for those who may be interested in attending, to have the details and the frequency of these in-person meetings. So, Sandra, this has been an absolutely delightful conversation, incredibly insightful. This has resonated with the listeners, I have no doubt. I truly, truly appreciate you coming on the show, sharing your journey, and sharing your insights with the listeners. And I truly, truly, genuinely hope that we can stay in touch and hopefully bring you on the show at a future time.
Thank you. And thank you, Aubrey, for being such an intensely active listener. I felt like I had a companion all the way through. This was such a delightful conversation. Thank you.
Well, I can't help but reciprocate. I truly enjoyed myself as well. And thank you for the thoughtful words, Sandra. Really appreciate it. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in and listening. And look, you may feel like this at times, but in our daily struggles and adversities, you're never alone. and hope is always around the corner, I humbly ask that you please share this show with someone you know, someone you love, who needs motivation, inspiration, and support. You know, we're all just roadies on this journey of life, but it feels good having you along by my side on this journey. Thanks again for listening. We'll chat again soon. We really hope you enjoyed this episode of The Roads Rediscovery. We'd love to hear from you. Shoot us an email at roadsrediscoverypodcast@gmail.com and leave us any questions or comments you may have.